Chapter 3. Hike with Passion. I was hitchhiking with a short, muscular man whose arms were covered with tattoos. Soon after getting into his decrepit car, he suddenly turned to me and said,
"I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but I have a passion for collecting meat cleavers."
"Oh, great." I gulped and was about to say, "Right about here is just great, sir. Thanks. I'll walk the rest of the 5 miles, thanks." But instead, I held my tongue and nodded, waiting to see what would happen next. Thru-hikers are hitchhiking connoisseurs. It's the only effective way to get into town when you're in the middle of nowhere. For example, the trail may cross a road that leads to the nearest town, but there are no taxis or buses in these remote areas. If you're out of food and the town is a few miles away, you must hitchhike. Some people are amazed that thru-hikers will hitchhike even if the town is just 1 mile away. They say, "You're walking over 2,168 miles. What's another mile?" Well, it's a lot. The reverse of that logic is, "I'm walking 2,168 miles, and I don't want to walk one more stinking mile than I need to complete the trail." Most thru-hikers care about the miles they hike on the trail, not off the trail. Every mile that they hike off the trail is a mile they could have hiked on the trail. Hiking the whole AT is not a walk in the park. For example, the total elevation gain for a thru-hiker is 471,151 feet. To put that in perspective, you would have to climb up Mount Everest 16 times from sea level to equal the elevation gain. A 5'6" person must take 5 million steps to complete the trail. Short people get to take an extra 500,000 steps, whereas tall ones sneak by with taking only 4.5 million steps. Of course, Shaquille O'Neal could probably do it in 3 steps. However, all these steps don't include trips into towns or taking side trails to view waterfalls. Now you're starting to think like a thru-hiker. That measly mile into town looks pretty big now. Of course, the reason a mile doesn't seem like much is that most of us are accustomed to driving everywhere. The average American barely walks a mile a week. On the other hand, when I heard a town was only a mile away, I would think, well, if it's flat, it will take me 20 minutes to walk there. That's 40 minutes round trip. If the road into town is steep, then it will take me at least an hour and perhaps more. What if it's raining or extremely hot and humid? That may make that extra mile even more arduous. If I'm hiking 20 miles a day, then that 2 mile round trip represents 10% of my effort today. That's significant. All of a sudden, that seemingly harmless mile starts looking like quite a burden. As a result, thru-hikers would rather stick their thumbs out for 15 minutes, rest their tired legs, eat a snack, and wait hopefully for someone to take them into town. However, when my Hell's Angel look-alike driver started talking about his passion for collecting meat cleavers, I almost wished that I had walked those 5 miles. Nevertheless, I gave him the benefit of the doubt because I've learned that tough-looking people are frequently good at heart. He turned out to be one of the nicest persons on the trail, and he drove out of his way to help me run errands, do a little sightseeing, and get me back on the trail safely. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Beware what you set your heart upon, for it surely shall be yours." This burly man's passion for meat cleavers made me think after I got back on the trail. No, I wasn't worried that he was on my tail with his prized meat cleaver clenched at his side. His passion for meat cleavers made me start paying attention to how I hike. I enjoy hiking a trail passionately. That doesn't necessarily mean that I am walking fast or aggressively. It means that I try to absorb the smells of the pine needles, the sounds of the creeks, and the textures in the ground beneath my feet. This constant fascination with nature keeps me entertained, whereas others might be bored and unhappy. Like the meat cleaver collector, I had discovered a passion of mine and was pursuing it vigorously. This helped me realize the third principle during my long pilgrimage. The third principle for getting the most out of life is that you must hike with passion. If you can't hike a trail with passion, find another trail. In other words, don't waste your time pursuing dull endeavors. Instead, pursue your passion. This is the third ingredient to squeezing the most out of life. After all, how can you claim that you got the most out of life if you did not spend most of it doing a job you loved? Nevertheless, the AT taught me while many people want to pursue their passion, they simply don't know what their passion is. Indeed, many who hike the AT hope that the answer will come to them during the expedition. The AT adventure not only helps you discover your passion, it also instructs you on how you can pursue it immediately. It also helps you confront the worries and fears you may have about following it. First, let's think about why you should hike with passion. Conscious hours are what really matter. Most people go about their lives working so that they can pay their bills and save a little bit of money. For most people, a job is just a means to an end. As one song puts it, "Everybody's working for the weekend." All right, that wasn't that good. But anyway, hey, I'm a writer, not a singer. Okay, so should we just work in any old job? Is a job just a job? After all, it's only 40 hours a week, right? Well, let's analyze this. There are 168 hours in a week. Therefore, 40 hours is about a quarter of your time. You might be willing to sacrifice 25% of your life so that you can do other things you enjoy the other 75% of the time. Although it's not a great trade-off, most people can live with that. However, let's delve further. Most people are unconscious a third of their lives. We sleep about 8 hours a day on average. It's funny to think that the average person spends 25 years of his life snoring. Let's not count these sleeping hours as part of your life. While sleep is essential, it is not really quality time. After all, you're out cold. Don't tell this to the shrinks who make a job out of interpreting your dreams. In a sense, you might as well be dead while you're sleeping. It's lost time. Therefore, if we discount those hours, the amount of conscious time that we have available every week is only 112 hours. Seen in that light, your 40-hour-a-week job is grabbing 35% of your conscious time, more than a third of your life. David Snarnoff said, "Nobody can be successful unless he loves his work." Now let's start factoring in your commute time. The average American has a 30-minute one-way commute. That's 1 hour a day commuting back and forth, 5 hours a week. By the way, for most people, those are usually five maddening hours. Now work is taking 40% of your conscious time. What about the time it takes you to get ready for work? Then there's also the time you spend thinking about work while you're not at work. Many of us claim that once we leave work, we stop thinking about it. But in reality, sometimes it's hard not to think about your job when you're home. This is especially true if your job is as enjoyable as cleaning out septic tanks. You might spend time discussing your frustrations with your spouse and/or friends. So let's tack on another 5 hours, making work a total of 50 hours per week. With only 112 conscious hours, that means you spend 45% of your conscious hours, including weekends, devoted to work. That's almost half of your life. Others think about their jobs all the time, whether they want to or not. They may be doctors on call, or Wall Street workers who think about the international markets when the domestic markets are closed, or radiation cleanup workers who wonder why they glow in the dark. Furthermore, many professionals work 60-hour weeks. Similarly, some people have to work 2 or 3 jobs just to make ends meet. They may work 80 hours a week. For these individuals, add another 20 to 40 hours of time to the base 50-hour work life. That's 70 to 90 hours of your 112 hours of conscious time. In summary, if you're a workaholic, you could be devoting up to 80% of your entire life to your job. That fact alone may compel you to call in sick. This explains why when Friday night finally rolls around, most couples spend it plopped in front of their TV, staring slack-jawed at Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Make your passion your job. Suddenly, it should become clear that a job should not just be about getting a paycheck. With so much of your precious life devoted to your job, it would be a total waste to be doing something you dislike. Imagine thinking on your deathbed that you spent 45 to 80% of your life doing something you didn't really care about. Talk about having a bad day. You may have a high-paying job, a wonderful family, caring friends, and extravagant vacations, but if your job is unfulfilling, could you say you got the most out of life? Would you consider your life a success if you wasted over half of it doing something you cared little about? Many people put off doing what they love for weekends or when they retire. One big problem with that thinking is that we have no idea when we're going to kick the bucket. Most people live their life believing they will live the average lifespan of 80 years, but are rudely surprised when their doctor tells them at 33 years old that they have cancer and have 12 months to live. Sadly, this is exactly what happened to Lisa's mother. Lisa was only 6 years old when her mother died of leukemia. Unless you believe in reincarnation, you have only one shot to get this life right. Get it right today. Right now. Confucius said, "Choose a job you love, and you will never have to work a day in your life." There are 3 basic steps to hiking with passion. First, discovering your passion. Second, finding a way to make it happen. And third, summoning the will to make it happen. Discovering your passion. Many people tell me, but how can I pursue my passion when I'm not sure what it is? I ponder that question as I walk through Vermont. Although many nobos dread Vermont, sobos welcome it. For nobos, it represents the beginning of the mountains of New England. After cruising through the relatively flat and easy mid-Atlantic states, nobos have to start working again in Vermont. However, Vermont is really just a warm-up to the 2 toughies, New Hampshire and Maine. The Appalachian Trail Conservancy, the official governing body of the AT, rates every state south of New Hampshire a 6 or less in difficulty on a 1 to 10 scale. New Hampshire and Maine both have sections that are rated an 8 to a 10. A score of 10 means, quote, use of hands required, footing precarious, not recommended for those with fear of heights, and not in good physical condition, unquote. In other words, you have to grab the roots of trees to pull yourself up. It's rock climbing without the rope. That's why a popular AT guidebook says there ought to be a sign near Hanover, New Hampshire that says, congratulations, Northbounders! You've completed 80% of the miles. But unfortunately, you have only done 50% of the work. This is yet another reason why we hiked southbound. We wanted to arrive in Hanover and say to ourselves, phew, we may have only done 20% of the miles, but we've done 50% of the work. We knew that when we got through New Hampshire and Maine, we could do the rest of the trail. Therefore, by the time we entered Vermont, I began to really relax and had time to contemplate on how one can discover one's passion. 5 questions. After backpacking about 240 miles through the Green Mountains of Vermont and the hot fields of Massachusetts, I came up with 5 questions you can ask yourself to help figure out what is your passion. Number 1. The billion-dollar question. One of the best ways to determine your passion is to find out what you would do if you had tons of money. So write down what you would do with the majority of your waking hours if you had $1 billion in the bank. Obviously, with $1 billion, you wouldn't have to work, although some lunatics might. Don't worry about how you would spend the money. Yes, I'm sure you would donate 99% of your wealth to the poor and needy. Great. That's nice. But the goal here is to find out what you would do with most of your time. Clearly, there are many things you could do with your hours, but what would consume the bulk of your time? Would you travel, teach, write books, help the sick, build homes, trade stocks, collect meat cleavers? Your answer is extremely telling. Look at what you would be doing. Most likely, that is your passion. It's hard to believe that it's that easy to uncover your passion, but the billion-dollar question is extremely effective at revealing your hidden passion. Some people feel that their passion must be something that is deeply locked away in their subconscious, and nothing short of hypnosis will reveal what it is. It's not that complicated. In fact, once you realize what your passion is, you may not be surprised. This is normal. After all, you have probably been dimly aware of your passion for some time. It's just that we have a tendency to deny our passions and not chase our dreams for a variety of reasons, and usually it's related to economics. The billion-dollar question removes that barrier and lets us think freely. Indeed, most people believe they can't afford to chase after their passions because they think it's too hard to make money chasing their passion. After all, we have bills to pay, like the mortgage, credit cards, car payments, children's education, groceries, and the NBA sports package on the satellite network. These expenses are so overwhelming that it gives us no time to contemplate what life is about. It reminds me of a funny exchange in Voltaire's hilarious publication in 1759 called Candide.
Do you believe that the Pope is the Antichrist, my friend? Said the minister.
I have never heard anyone say so, replied Candide. But whether he is or he isn't, I want some food. Candide can't entertain philosophical questions because he's hungry. Similarly, we can't contemplate fundamental questions on life because we're too busy just trying to make money to put food on the table. That's why the second principle is so important. It's hard to hike with passion until you learn to beware of summit fever. It's important not to raise your standard of living to a level that doesn't let you pursue your passion. Otherwise, you'll be so besieged with your day-to-day obligations that you won't have a chance to do what you really love doing. As we discussed in Chapter 2, you may need to make a few sacrifices to bring your standard of living in line with your earnings to give you the freedom to do what you love. Question number 2. The "what catches your eye" question. If the billion-dollar question doesn't help you figure out what your passion is, then consider another exercise called the "what catches your eye" question. This exercise may help narrow down the list if you have many passions, or may help bring out one passion that is deeply hidden in your mind. When you flip through magazines or newspapers, what catches your eye? What are the words or the themes that make your eye stop and want to read more about the subject? Write down all the words and subjects that come to mind. The possibilities are limitless, but some examples are movies, basketball, stocks and bonds, gardening, interior design, philanthropy, opera, sports cars, antiques, anthropology, pottery, tango, diabetes, Africa, hot springs, skunk wrestling. The list goes on and on. Of course, you may have many interests, so just write down your top five, although it's best if you can narrow it down to your favorite one or two. If you're struggling for ideas, considering looking at what pages you bookmarked on the internet, or go to your bookshelf and pull out your favorite books to see if you can detect a pattern. For example, in the 1990s, my eye would naturally get attracted to the words robotics or robots or artificial intelligence. I know, I'm a geek. I realize that the subject naturally fascinated me. Therefore, in 1995, I co-founded a robotic vision system company in Silicon Valley to pursue this passion of mine. In 1746, Denis Diderot wrote a book called Pensées philosophiques, where he said, "Only passions, great passions, can elevate the soul to great things." If you have several subjects that interest you, pick your favorite one. This is an area that you enjoy learning about and may even be an expert in, and yet you're currently doing it for free. Imagine if someone were to pay you to research or be an expert in this subject. That's the beauty of hiking with passion. Above all, don't limit yourself to subjects that you think could pay money. Even if you can't imagine making money, don't worry about that now. We'll deal with that later. For now, just think without restraint and write down topics that grab your attention. Perhaps you still can't focus on anything in particular because A, you haven't found any one subject that stands out, B, you've found many and can't decide, or C, your neighbors are screeching their fingers across their blackboard again. If you have many interests, compare the answer of the "what catches your eye" question with the billion-dollar question. Is there some common ground? Is something overlapping in both questions? If you're still stuck, then try the next question. Number 3, the leisure time question. Some people might not have gotten too many ideas from the last question because they don't read much. So brainstorm on this. Analyze what you do with your free time. Write down everything you enjoy doing with your leisure time. It rarely hurts to brainstorm some more, so use this question to increase your list of passions. This question helps you identify what you enjoy doing. For example, some people enjoy remodeling, others see it as a chore. Some enjoy stargazing, others would rather be in a nightclub. Some people enjoy long backpacking trips, others think we're nuts. If you do spend quite a bit of your leisure time watching TV, then analyze what you look at. Do you notice a pattern? Are you watching a lot of sitcoms? If so, write down that you might consider a career in comedy. Don't worry, that doesn't necessarily mean getting up on stage and cracking jokes. Somebody is writing all those scripts for those sitcoms. Maybe this could be you. Is there a local theater company that could use you? What about trying to become the next Dave Barry? And if you want to be a real comedian, consider a career in politics. Do you spend most of your time watching the news on TV? If so, what stories attract you? Write down that a career in media might interest you. Do you enjoy watching the political debates on TV? There are plenty of think tanks out there who need hard workers. Do you enjoy the local news? Consider becoming an activist for a cause that you're passionate about. Do you love following sports? The sporting industry is a multi-billion dollar industry with plenty of avenues to get involved. It's fascinating to see what people do with their leisure time. It's those few hours where you're doing something because you enjoy it. Nobody's urging you to do it. You're doing it because it's fun. If you can transform that passion into a job or a career, then you're optimizing your life. Number 4, the "you'll succeed no matter what" question. Here's another effective exercise to uncover your hidden passion. Let's assume you drink a potion that gives you the power to succeed in absolutely anything. No matter what you decide to do, you're guaranteed to succeed. For example, let's say your dream is to become a famous pop star, but you can't sing. Thanks to this potion, you'll become famous anyway, despite your voice, just like Jessica Simpson. If you can't act, you'll somehow become a superstar, despite having zero talent, just like Keanu Reeves. And if being a writer is your dream, even though you can barely write your name, then after drinking this potion, you'll soon be writing self-help books based on the Appalachian Trail. And yours will actually be good. So here's the question. If you were guaranteed that you would become successful in whatever you pursued, what would you do? Would you be a poet, a stockbroker, a fashion designer, a media tycoon, a sports star, a great mother? Hegel wrote in 1832 in his book called Philosophy of History. He said, "Nothing great in the world has been accomplished without passion." We frequently don't do what we love because we lack confidence. We fear the unknown. We tell ourselves, "I'm not good enough," or "I've just had a lot of bad luck." But now with the genie out of the bottle, you can have as much luck, skill, and talent you need to succeed. Analyze your answers and see how they compare to your answers in the previous questions. Are you starting to see a common thread? If not, try the last question. Number 5, the "who would you switch places with" question. This question is somewhat tricky because you have to forget about the money issue. If you could switch places with anyone, who would it be? Although you might pick someone famous, it's perfectly acceptable to pick someone you know personally, like Bob at the corner store. 2 rules. First, you can't pick someone who is dead. Second, don't take into account how much money the person makes. Instead, look at the daily responsibilities of the job. The idea is to find the person you would like to switch places with today. Who do you look at and think, "Man, I would love to have her job"? In other words, whose job would you take and not even consider it a job? Be sure to think about everything that comes with the job too, not just the glamorous side. For instance, you may fantasize about switching jobs with Julia Roberts so that you could live the lavish life, but would you be willing to put up with the stresses of fame and the process of making and promoting a movie if you didn't get paid $20 million per film? Would you do her job if you were only making $25,000 a year? Pick the person's job, not the person's pay. Look at what they do day to day and figure out if you would enjoy doing that, even at a modest pay. Once again, the possibilities are unlimited. You might want to switch places with Larry King, Donna Karen, your senator, the coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, the CEO of Ford, the local librarian, the editor of Car and Driver magazine, the local building contractor, or Britney Spears.
When asked what she enjoyed about touring, Britney Spears said, "I get to go to lots of overseas places, like Canada."
Although I've named many famous people, you should consider people in your community. After you imagine their day-to-day life, the good and the bad, ask yourself if you would do their job even if it paid you 20 to 50% less than what you make now. When I worked at Microsoft, some employees wondered why billionaires like Bill Gates keep working. The answer is simple. They're pursuing their passion. They don't view their job as work. These working billionaires would be doing their jobs even if they were paid a pittance. In fact, Bill Gates basically did just that when he started Microsoft. That's what hiking with passion is all about. Now that you've picked someone you'd like to switch places with, start scrutinizing her life. Log on the internet to learn as much as possible about her daily life. Or if the person is local and not super famous, ask if you can have an informational interview. Find out how her life really is, not just the exterior image. Try to confirm that her job and life are what you imagine them to be. What are the downsides? Is the person away from her family all the time? Does the person work on weekends? Is the person, in fact, on America's Most Wanted list? If after all your investigations, you still admire the person's way of life and wish you could follow it, then start learning how the person got where he or she is today. We'll discuss more about this in Chapter 4. For example, while I was walking through Massachusetts, I thought I had discovered my dream job, research and product development executive at Ben & Jerry's. Why? You get paid to eat a lot of ice cream. So later I investigated and discovered that it's not that glamorous. Arnold Carbone, who holds that position, said that when experimenting with coffee flavors, he might create 15 batches per day. By the end of the day, his head feels like it's going to explode. Moreover, some ice cream concepts are just stupid. Somebody in Ben & Jerry's research department had the bright idea of creating chocolate-covered potato chips and sour cream and onion-flavored ice cream. Yuck! That would even gross out a hungry thru-hiker. So that's why today I'm a writer and not the research and product development executive at Ben & Jerry's.
Discovering your passion on the AT. If you ask the average thru-hiker why they chose to quit their job, move out of their house, and leave their loved ones behind, many will tell you that they're on a mission to find out what they want to do next in life. In short, they want to discover their passion. Although it is possible to conduct this deep thinking at home, there are more obstacles to overcome, such as the telephone, email, bills, friends and family, groceries, laundry, endless chores, and your landlord. You escape these distractions on the AT, but the AT doesn't have a monopoly on peace of mind. There are other ways of finding solitude that don't involve slogging through the wilderness. If you're having trouble getting away from it all, then consider a multi-week or multi-month trip to somewhere free of communications and distractions. It can be cheap and close. The key is isolation. That way, you will have no excuse for not focusing on what you want to do next and how you would like to do it.
Thank you. What if you can't seem to uncover your passion? After going through these 5 questions, you may not come out with a satisfactory answer. You may go through the exercises and not find any compelling activity that you would do. Analyze why you cannot find anything that stands out. Are you sure you're letting your mind think freely? Or are you hampering your thoughts by thinking that you couldn't pursue your passion because it's not lucrative, or it'll make your spouse upset, or it's too risky? Make sure that you completely rid yourself of any insecurity during these exercises, or else you won't get an honest answer.
Romantics, listen up. One of the challenges of identifying a suitable passion to pursue is figuring out if you'll get bored with it. We face the danger of romanticizing an interest. I love knitting. Wouldn't it be great to do that all day? You may quickly discover that your passion is simply a hobby. Therefore, it's important to immerse yourself as much as possible in your potential passion to verify that you won't get sick of it in short order.
What if you don't have a passion? Take solace. Many people are not born with a burning passion. Most humans have varied interest, but nothing that sticks out more than the others. This may explain why the average person makes at least 3 major career changes in his or her life. Moreover, passions don't necessarily last forever. Beethoven was passionate about music throughout his life, but most of us mortals are lucky if our passion lasts for more than 5 years. You might have a passion today, but in 6 months or 6 years, you might have a new passion. And sometimes you may not feel a tug in any particular direction. This is natural and normal. Do not get anxious or desperate. Do not try to convince yourself that you are passionate about something you are not. If you're in a lull, and you're not sure what to do next, remember the first principle: hike your own hike. Therefore, if you're struggling to follow the third principle, don't forget to continue to follow the fun compass as much as possible. That means minimizing your work hours, spending more time with your family and friends, and experimenting with new activities. Yogi Berra said, "We're lost, but we're making good time." The process of elimination. You may not know what your passion is, but that doesn't mean you should continue doing what you're doing if it makes you miserable. Over 70% of thru-hikers go solo, and so they have plenty of time to think. One thru-hiker told me that when he couldn't identify his passion, he started writing down everything that he didn't like to do. Therefore, write down the previous jobs that you have done that you did not enjoy. The process of elimination is a long way to get to an answer, but it still can be effective. Keep the list up to date. Ask people about their jobs and their passions. If you can't imagine enjoying a particular job, then add it to the blacklist. D.H. Lawrence said, "If it doesn't absorb you, if you don't love it, don't do it." If you're not sure if you would like a certain job or activity, then try it. Don't quit your job and plunge headlong into it. Instead, take small steps. For example, let's say you've been a lawyer for 2 years and you hate your job, yet you don't know what you want to do next because you don't know your passion. However, you know that you don't enjoy the restaurant business because you were once a waiter, and you know you wouldn't enjoy working in the media business because your best friend works in it and has turned you off on it. But you're intrigued with the investment industry because you've talked with some friends of yours and it sounds interesting. But you're not sure if it's your passion. Solution: join an investment club. You keep your job as a lawyer, but during nights and weekends, you get together with an investment club and see what it's like to talk about stocks and bonds all day long. Perhaps you'll get excited and love it, or perhaps you'll lose your life savings. But at least you'll have a better feel of the intricacies of the profession. The same can be done with many activities that you think might be your passion, but you're not 100% sure. Dig deeper into them by talking with people in the industry, and if it still looks promising, start testing it yourself. If you love being around horses, volunteer at an equestrian ranch. You may adore feeding the horses and cleaning out the barn. On the other hand, it might get old pretty quick. In conclusion, while you may not have a passion today, at the very least, don't do anything you don't enjoy. Keep experimenting every few months until something sticks. Alfred Lord Tennyson said, "The happiness of a man in this life does not consist in the absence, but in the mastery of his passions." What if you have more than one passion? It is natural to have multiple interests and not to feel like one pulls you more than any others. For example, you may have a passion for gardening, water skiing, and studying 16th century France. Consider yourself lucky. Most people struggle to find one passion, and you've got several. What should you do? You have two options. First option, combining the passions. Try to combine as many of those interests into one job. In the above example, you could pursue a PhD in French history and write your dissertation on the agricultural techniques of the Renaissance. This doesn't involve your passion for water skiing, but you can do that on weekends. Picking one. You could just focus on one passion. If no one passion stands out above the others, then pick the one that has the best chance to be lucrative. Let's say you're passionate about art, but you also love protecting people's rights. It's hard to make money as a painter, but defense attorneys don't do too badly. If you truly have no preference, then pick the one that pays better and keep the other passion as a hobby. What if your passion is kind of weird? There's nothing wrong with pursuing your passion, even if it is a little odd. Some people might consider you eccentric, but take it as a compliment. Dr. David Weeks, author of Eccentrics, The Scientific Investigation, interviewed 1,100 eccentrics and admired their sense of humor, creative imagination, and strong will. Eccentrics are so curious that they are oblivious to the frustrations and stresses of daily life that most people perceive. Dr. Weeks found that not only do eccentrics live 5 to 10 years longer than the norm, they are also, on average, healthier, happier, and more intelligent than the rest of the population. Dr. Weeks writes, "They don't try to keep up with the Joneses, they don't worry about conforming, and they usually have a firm belief that they are right and the rest of the world is wrong." Eccentricity, he stresses, is not a mental illness. Eccentrics are aware of their uniqueness from an early age and are happily obsessed with their hobbies. They are often single, the oldest or only child, and poor spellers. They tend to be cheerful and idealistic, full of projects to improve or save the world. They may tinker with perpetual motion machines, discover how to assemble cars from rubbish, or, in the case of John Chapman, better known as Johnny Appleseed, traverse America planting zillions of apple trees.
Fireworks. George Plimpton wisely said, "I do feel that happiness is associated with being passionate about something." And his passion was fireworks. Years ago, he went to China to visit a fireworks factory and was envious of the person who had the job of naming each firework. Plimpton concluded that the simple pleasure of such a job would make his final years fulfilling. His uncommon passion didn't embarrass him or discourage him from pursuing it. In his last few years, he wrote a colorful book about his passion and became New York City's honorary commissioner on fireworks.
In conclusion, there's nothing wrong with pursuing an eccentric passion. Celebrate it. George Burns said, "When I was young, I was called a rugged individualist. When I was in my 50s, I was considered eccentric. Here, I'm doing and saying the same things I did then, and I'm labeled senile."
An inspiring career change. France's longtime friend, Eric, always had a profound interest in music and sound, but he was also good in biology. At Yale, he kept music as a hobby by joining a singing group, but chose a major that was responsible, molecular biophysics and biochemistry. However, after doing a couple of summer internships at a lab, he realized that he didn't enjoy it, and that he had been denying his true passion of music and sound. Most people would probably have just kept going on in their career path, because who could turn down the lucrative six-figure salaries in the hot genetics field? Most people might have just kept the sound interest as a hobby. However, Eric had unusual courage. Although he graduated with his degree in molecular biophysics and biochemistry, he immediately applied to Yale's prestigious drama school to get a master's degree. His dream was to work for the Skywalker Sound, George Lucas's prominent sound firm. After graduating, he accepted a job at $1,000 a year. For almost 2 years, Eric lived frugally in his parents' house doing whatever it took to break into the film and sound industry. To pursue his passion, he built up his resume by doing film projects for free. As his debt grew, his determination never faltered. In less than 2 years, his perseverance was rewarded. He became a sound designer at Skywalker Sound. Today, he works in Hollywood. He has done the sound work for over 40 movies, including Sixth Sense, Castaway, and Jersey Girl, among others. And after working at Skywalker for 4 years, he is now earning a six-figure salary.
Finding a way to make it happen. Let's assume you've practiced the second principle. Your expenses are under control, you have no debt, and you're free to hike with passion. What's next? Although most of us don't have $1 billion in the bank, that doesn't mean we can't pursue our passions. The standard reason most people don't hike with passion is that they believe they can't make any money that way. Although that may be true, more often, we simply don't think creatively about making our dreams come true. George Bernard Shaw said, "A life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing." We tend to forget all the people who make millions of dollars doing what they love. For example, let's say your passion is to watch football. You say, "I'd love to watch football all day long, but I can't make any money doing that." So instead, you stay in your unfulfilling job for the next 30 years and stick to watching football on Sundays. A young kid from Brooklyn loves sports with a passion. He would study statistics and watch as many games as possible. He would go to the electronics store on Sunday so he could watch multiple games at the same time. He wondered if he could make a living doing this. He diligently pursued his passion. He didn't make much money in the beginning. In fact, the first several years were pretty rough. But in the end, he made it big. His name is Al Michaels. Michaels, one of the best sports announcers of all time, is perhaps most famous for covering Monday Night Football for ABC. He has 3 Emmy Awards for Outstanding Sports Personality and is a multimillionaire. Do you think he loves his job? Jerry Giles said, "What you do is more important than how much you make, and how you feel about it is more important than what you do." If you're stuck and you can't figure out how to turn your passion into reality, then consider these possibilities. I'm going to give you a list of sample passions, and then tell you what you can do to pursue that passion. For example, your passion might be
eat out at fancy restaurants.
What you can do to pursue that passion is become a food critic, work for gourmet magazine, become a chef,
help the homeless.
Well, then you can join a church that helps homeless. work for a nonprofit that helps find jobs and homes for the poor.
Work for charity.
Then work for the Sierra Club. Work for the United Way. Start your own charity.
Debate politics.
Well, run for office. Work for the governor. Join a think tank.
Play golf.
You can become a golf instructor. You can work the grounds. You can work to become a country club administrator.
Write books.
Start writing articles, short stories, or just write the book.
Sit on boards of companies.
Well, join a very small company and join their board. Start your own company and create a board. Invest a startup and join the board.
Cook all day.
Save money to enter a cooking academy to become a sous chef and work your way up.
Trade stocks?
Well, then join an investment club or a brokerage.
Dance.
Well, then join a dance group. Become a dance instructor.
Conduct scientific experiments.
Then invent something and patent it. Join a university research team.
Listen to music.
Join MTV. Work for a radio station. Write for Rolling Stone magazine. Open a music store. Volunteer for the symphony or the opera house. So the list could be endless, but the point is to brainstorm all the potential ways you could make money in pursuing your passion. Don't worry about how much money you'll make, but try to imagine if someone could somehow compensate you. Ask your friends for ideas. It's easy to forget, but people make money doing almost anything. Believe it or not, some people are even paid to sleep. Why? They're test subjects for psychology experiments. You're never too old. Over 70% of the AT thru-hikers are male. Lisa and I wondered who would be the first female Nobo we would meet on the AT. That woman was definitely going to impress and inspire Lisa. Lisa was eager to meet her. She expected a 25-year-old, super fit Amazon woman to round the corner one day and tell her that she had walked from Georgia. This superwoman would have Herculean legs coupled with a fast and powerful stride. She would effortlessly carry her 50-pound pack up and down the mountains. Well, it took us 3 days of hiking to bump into the first female Nobo. But she was nothing like Lisa expected. We were battling deer flies and mosquitoes in the swamps of the 100-mile wilderness in Maine. This is the most isolated part of the AT and just south of Mount Katahdin, the starting point for Sobos. Until recently, this 100-mile stretch of land had no resupply points. At the beginning, most thru-hikers averaged 10 miles a day, so many carried 10 days of food for this section. We met some hikers with 70 to 100-pound loads. When you consider that Katahdin is the single toughest climb on the AT, that the 100-mile wilderness immediately follows it, and that New England is the toughest section on the entire AT, you can understand why 90% of the thru-hikers start in Georgia. They prefer avoiding a baptism by fire. Only the best prepared, or the most foolish, walk south. Feeling like fools with mosquitoes buzzing at our ears, we saw an old couple round the corner. Although we were hiking quite fast to keep the mosquitoes at bay, this elderly couple was plodding along, very slowly and methodically. The humidity was stifling, but they were fully clothed. Their beige pants and shirts were soaked in sweat. I got even hotter just looking at them with their hats on. We were under trees and in the shade, so I didn't understand why they had their sweat-soaked hats on, except to keep the mosquitoes and the deer flies from biting their scalps. We couldn't believe that these old folks had picked such a brutal day to go for a walk in the woods. Hi, where are you coming from? I asked quickly, hoping to be polite, but short, because I didn't want to linger long in the company of the bugs.
Georgia, they replied. This is Gene, and I'm Comer, said the old man.
I was stunned. How old are you? I asked.
We're both in our 60s, Gene replied. Sadly, we were all so overwhelmed with bugs that none of us wanted to stay to chat. So we bid them farewell, but forever remember their lesson. You're never too old to hike with passion.
At the age of 67, Emma Grandma Gatewood was the first person, male or female, to thru-hike the AT twice. She said, I want to see what's on the other side of that hill. Then what's beyond that?
I eventually tracked down Comer and Jean while I was writing this book. I asked them to convey what they had learned on the AT. In an email, they wrote,
There is so much one can relate to, but I think the trail reinforces that one can achieve a goal with their willpower. To get up every morning from a warm sleeping bag when it's cold and wet, load up your pack and walk all day to meet all the challenges the trail offers, and not give up when it is so easy to say, let's go home. Not having ever backpacked before, and not in the best shape to climb the many mountains and go through as many weather changes, took a lot of willpower.
Pay particular attention to the first and last sentence they wrote to me. It brings up a key action we have to take to pursue our passion. Summoning the will. The third and final step to hiking with passion is the hardest. You may know exactly what your passion is. You may know precisely what you need to do to pursue the dream and make it happen. However, you simply don't have the guts to do it. Goethe said, "Knowing is not enough. We must apply. Willing is not enough. We must do." The list of excuses for not summoning the will is endless. I have a mortgage. I have a family to support. I would have to move to another city. I don't speak the language. I have no experience. I would have to sell my cars and other possessions. I would have to give up my beloved cubicle. What do you need to complete the AT? There is no doubt that hiking with passion is hard. If it weren't, then everyone would be doing it. Similarly, through hiking the AT is hard. I met many successful pilgrims on the trail, and I tried to look for a common thread. Here are some characteristics I thought they would share. Wealth. I figured you might need the financial wherewithal to support the multi-month journey. Wrong. One guy, Cheapo, hiked from Georgia to New York on $20. So I figured you need good gear. After all, those who travel with shoddy equipment are surely at a disadvantage, right? Wrong. A man from Concord, California, thru-hiked with the same old decrepit gear he had 35 years ago. All right, well, and superior nutrition, right? I figured poor nutrition would certainly catch up to you during the hike and hamper your ability to finish it. Wrong. A few thru-hikers survived mainly on Snickers and other junk foods. Excellent cardiovascular conditioning. Thru-hiking is the ultimate endurance sport, so surely cardiovascular fitness is paramount, right? Wrong. In Georgia, I met George Zingenfuss, who blew that theory. He was in his 60s and hiked the AT with only one lung. Disease-free. Your body should be healthy and free of debilitating diseases, right? Wrong. Sticks and Stones, two ex-military men, thru-hiked together to raise money for leukodystrophy, which Sticks battled. Although leukodystrophy is a progressive disorder that affects the brain, spinal cord, and peripheral nerves, it did not stop Sticks from thru-hiking the AT. Youth. I initially thought that being young and strong was a common denominator among those who completed the thru-hike. Wrong. I recall the first female thru-hiker I met, Jean. She was in her 60s. Others have completed it in their 70s. In 2004, a guy who called himself the Easy One became the oldest person to ever thru-hike the AT. He was 81 years old. The fastest thru-hiker our year was Lindsay, a man who biked from California to Georgia, hiked up to Maine in about 72 days, and then biked back to California. He averaged about 30 miles a day on the AT and never took a day off. He was 63. Sight. Okay, at the very least, you should be able to see the trail, right? Wrong again. A blind man, Bill Irwin, hiked the whole trail with his trusty seeing eye dog named Orient. It took him 9 months, which is 50% longer than average, and he fell hundreds of times, but he made it. I was dumbfounded. I couldn't seem to find a common denominator among all the successful thru-hikers. Yes, the majority was young, strong, ate healthy food, carried lightweight gear, and could actually see the trail. But there were so many exceptions. It wasn't until I hit Georgia that I figured it out. The only common thread that separated the successful thru-hikers from those who weren't successful was their will. Those who hike the whole AT in one season have an unbreakable will. They want to complete the trail so badly that nothing will stop them. Their rock-solid courage triumphs over the fear and adversity that confronts them throughout their arduous journey. Muhammad Ali said, "Champions aren't made in the gyms. Champions are made from something they have deep inside them, a desire, a dream, a vision. They have to have last-minute stamina. They have to be a little faster. They have to have the skill and the will. But the will must be stronger than the skill." Mustering courage. It's tough to muster the courage to hike with passion, but ask yourself, why am I on this planet? To spend half my life doing a job I don't love? Most people continue in deadpan jobs that pay a decent wage. Others make lots of money, but still don't like what they are doing. Many of my Harvard graduates took 80-hour-a-week jobs that paid six figures, but a year or two later were completely disenchanted and quit.
Helen Keller said, "Life is either a daring adventure or nothing."
It's hard to summon the will to pursue your passion when you have a well-paying job. I know what it's like to take a 100% pay cut. In 1997, I was in business school, and I received an unsolicited email from Goldman Sachs, a leading investment bank. They had reviewed my resume, which I didn't even send to them, and they would really like me to work for their international division in Zurich, Switzerland. They liked that I was fluent in three languages. The starting compensation package would be $150,000 a year. In less than 5 years, I could be earning about $500,000 a year, and possibly more. It was tempting, to say the least. I politely told him that I was not interested, and I wanted to do what I had always dreamed of doing, starting my own company. I knew I would not be happy as an investment banker. I would constantly be thinking of all the things I would rather be doing. Therefore, I graduated from business school and was the only one in my class whose starting salary was zero. I effectively took a $150,000 pay cut. For 1 year, I worked without a salary while I focused on getting sales in the door. Eventually, I closed some deals, and I made about half of what I would have made in my first year at Goldman. I was doing what I loved, but it was certainly a hard decision. It takes a strong will, and in some cases, a tinge of insanity. Groucho Marx said, "I worked myself up from nothing to a state of extreme poverty." One of the secrets to mustering the courage is to visualize the end of each path. Project yourself into the future and imagine how you will feel in 5 or 20 years if you continue down the path you're going. Then imagine how much more happy and fulfilled your life would be if you created an inflection point today. Moreover, don't just focus on the destination, but also visualize the journey. When you hike with passion, the path is more interesting than when you hike with apathy. Visualizing those alternate futures may motivate you to muster the courage to hike with passion. Peter Drucker said, "There is the risk you cannot afford to take, and there is the risk you cannot afford not to take." But what about money? Let's say you've come this far and agree that you should hike with passion, but you would really like to have certain things in life. You want a nice place to live, a luxury car, and you want an automatic garage door opener. Although many dream of pursuing their passion, we don't do it because we fear that it will not produce any income. It's no surprise that most of us would agree with Groucho Marx, who said, "Money will not make you happy, and happy will not make you money." Of course, a few lucky people will discover that their life is something that happens to also be fairly lucrative. If your passion is to save lives, nobody's going to worry about you making a living as a doctor. Similarly, if you love trading derivatives on Wall Street, your mom won't scold you for pursuing that passion. Unfortunately, for many of us, our passions don't lead us on careers that easily lead to big bucks. You might have a passion for writing, acting, or gardening. How are you ever going to make money doing that? Jonathan Winter said, "I couldn't wait for success, so I went ahead without it." Think about the top of your ideal profession. No matter what profession you pick, think about the individuals who have made it to the pinnacle of that profession. Are they poor? Let's examine a few professions that most people think are doomed to poverty, and let's see how those who pursued them to the top fared. These are professions that your parents would probably tell you not to pursue because you'll never make any money that way. Let's see what a few rebellious kids, or some with encouraging parents, did with their lives.
A profession and what people might think about trying to make a living pursuing it. Music. Can you imagine telling your parents or spouse that you wanted to pursue a music career? It's filled with people living hand to mouth, right? How can you ever make money doing that?
Well, Michael Jackson made and spent a few billion dollars. Yo-Yo Ma brings home the bacon. Even folk singers make decent money, like Tracy Chapman. Pavarotti is a multimillionaire who gets to sing and eat all day long.
Sports. You love to play basketball, but can you make a living off of it?
Michael Jordan did. Tiger Woods has been pursuing his passion before he learned to walk, and he's worth tens of millions. Phil Jackson coaches basketball teams and makes money to prove it. John Madden goes boom, boom, boom all the way to the bank.
Painting. You wonder how well it would go over if you told your spouse that you wanted to become a painter. Talk about living in poverty, right?
Picasso didn't care. He loved to paint and did it anyway. It more than paid his bills. Monet made it through the tough times in Paris just by selling a few paintings.
Fashion industry. Here's another winner. Mom, I want to make dresses. Yeah, right.
Ralph Lauren didn't do too badly. Donna Karan loved clothes and fashion ever since she could remember. She wasn't sure if she could make a living, but that was secondary. She wanted to do what she loved.
Cooking industry. How could you convince your loving spouse that you wanted to give up your $70,000 a year job to become a chef?
Wolfgang Puck maybe didn't have a $70,000 a year job, but if he did, I'm sure he would have left it to pursue his passion. Now he can make $70,000 a month.
Writing. One way to produce a lot of chuckles in a crowd is to say you want to make a living as a writer.
J.K. Rowling, though, laughs all the way to the bank. Daniel Steele enjoys her 55 cars and wonders if she should buy another one.
Acting. Isn't struggling actor redundant? Guaranteed way to poverty.
Well, Jim Carrey makes $20 million per movie to make people laugh. Is it obvious that this guy is pursuing his passion or what?
Psychology. You like to talk about people's problems and how to resolve them. No money there, right?
Oprah Winfrey is the richest female in the entertainment industry with a net worth of over $1 billion. Dr. Phil, her mentor, can't be doing too badly either. Are you getting that?
Okay, after you look at that list, you're probably saying, but these guys are the absolute best of their profession, and I can't expect to do that. Well, you're right. It would be irresponsible for me to suggest that you will do as well as the best have. You might, but you certainly can't bank on it. So now what? Let's start by reminding ourselves that in any profession, there is a range of income. Entry-level people make far less than the outstanding performers and or the more experienced people. The greater your excellence, the more you make. Your excellence is a combination of experience, skill, and luck. Socrates said, "Wealth does not bring about excellence, but excellence brings about wealth and all other public and private blessings for men." As you climb the ladder of excellence, your income rises accordingly. Those who are at the top of their profession today were not there several years ago. They were still struggling their way up. Julia Roberts didn't make $20 million on her first film. She made maybe only $20,000 that whole year. On the other hand, she didn't jump from making $20,000 a year to $20 million either. It took 4 long years before she made her first hit, which was Pretty Woman, and she still wasn't even making $1 million. It took her almost another 10 years before she was offered 8 figures. Julia Roberts journeyed up the income ladder, making more as her experience and her abilities grew. She wasn't an overnight success. We tend to glorify those who are at the top of their profession and forget the rest. We start believing that either we make it big or we starve. It seems that if you want to pursue a football career, you either make $5 million a year or you play flag football in the park. What about the people who play in the Canadian or Arena Football League? What about the backup players who make $100,000 a year? Just listen to this one poor baseball player whine about his measly salary. He's a Texas Ranger, and he said, "Hey, people think that we make $3 or $4 million a year. They don't realize that most of us only make $500,000 a year."
Waking up on the AT. When we would get up in the morning on the AT, we would say that we felt like a pair of 70-year-olds. We couldn't imagine what the real 70-year-olds that we saw on the trail felt like. Having hiked for 14 hours the previous day, our bodies begged us to stay in our sleeping bags. We could almost hear the creaking of our joints and tearing of our muscles as we propped ourselves up. Our feet were so swollen that we would sleep with our packs under our legs to keep them elevated. The worst part was standing up. Utter pain would ripple through our bodies as we started walking. However, after 5 minutes of walking, we felt normal again. The blood was pumping through our bodies and we felt great to be back on the trail. Thus, the AT had taught me another lesson about hiking with passion. It's those first steps that are the most difficult. Summoning the courage to do it is hard, but if you lack the courage, you can gain it by taking small steps. We wouldn't take big strides the moment after we got up. We took tiny steps and we walked gingerly. Therefore, look for small actions you can do today that will take you one step closer to pursuing your passion. after a few small actions, you'll say, "Hey, this isn't so bad." And you'll be walking with a confident and meaningful stride.
Okay, so let's say that you want to be a photographer. You say it's either poverty or millions of dollars, like Ansel Adams. Aren't there photographers who make $175,000 a year? Aren't there some who make $80,000? Maybe a photographer who works for National Geographic makes $50,000 a year. And maybe a junior photographer for Vogue magazine makes $25,000 a year. The point is that there is always an income ladder. Same goes for being the next Julia Child. Eleanor Clivens spent 4 weeks in Paris and returned to Maine inspired. After searching for her passion using the classic tools a career counselor gave her, she concluded that she should write cookbooks. Her family chuckled. However, after 8 years of pursuing her passion, she's written 4 cookbooks, dozens of articles, toured the country to sign books and teach cooking classes, and has been a guest on network television morning shows along with the Food Network cable channel. Her income is not the same as Julia Child's, but she's not living in poverty. In short, hiking with passion in a tough industry is not an all-or-nothing bet. It's hard to make a living making pottery, but if you're truly passionate about it, you will be persistent and you will eventually find a way to make decent money. If you're lucky and or extremely good, you'll find a way to make lots of money. Don't worry about money. If you're hiking with passion, money will find you. It usually does for those who do what they love. And in the case that you don't end up making a fortune, you will still lie on your deathbed feeling better about your life than the man who sacrificed his life so that he could have a few more digits in his bank account when he died. Henri-Frédéric Amiel said, "Without passion, man is a mere latent force and possibility, like the flint which awaits the shock of the iron before it can give forth its spark."
Career bashing. I frequently give examples of someone who has a traditional corporate job but has a passion in a classic poverty-related job, like writing. Some may feel that I'm bashing traditional careers. Not at all. I know people who love being a product manager, or a lawyer, or an accountant, or a factory worker. And if that's your passion, then absolutely go for it. Those people rarely need encouragement and direction on pursuing their passion. Theirs is an easy road. Similarly, it's rare that someone is working in a poverty career and would rather be in a traditional career. It's not every day that you find a sculptor who fantasizes about being a paralegal. Therefore, I have focused on the most likely scenario. My goal is not to put down people who pursue traditional careers, but rather to celebrate those who pursue their passion, whatever it may be.
So you may ask, isn't there another way to pursue one's passion? Yes. I fully understand that quitting your secure job that pays good money to pursue your passion and take a 50% pay cut or more is highly uncomfortable. In some cases, it is impossible. You might have kids to support, and it would be irresponsible to live in a tent and have your kids worry about their next meal while you run off and pursue your acting career. Is there a way to pursue your passion without giving up everything you have? Yes, it is a compromise, but it's better than the status quo. Let's assume that you're a controller at a solid company making $90,000 a year. Although you're good at working with numbers, it's not your passion. Playing volleyball is. You think about volleyball all day long, you dream about it, you play it every chance you get, and talk about it in online chat rooms. You've researched it, and it's possible to make a living playing volleyball. The best volleyball players make over $1 million a year. However, there's one slight problem. You're short and 43 years old. Quitting your job and chasing your dream would be downright foolish. So do you give up and stay in a job that you hate? No. You look at related fields. Ask yourself, why do I really want to be a volleyball player? Is it because you enjoy watching volleyball? Or do you simply enjoy competitive sports? Analyze your true motivations and the reasons why you're attracted to your targeted profession. Following the example above,
here are a few possibilities of related fields. You could start or join a company that sells volleyball-related gear. You could become a part-time volleyball coach and eventually work your way up to the collegiate or Olympic level. You could set up and manage volleyball tournaments in your area or nationwide. You could work to become an announcer for volleyball tournaments on TV, announcing for other sports to supplement your income. You could work for or start up a volleyball magazine or website. Without a doubt, if you were to pursue any of these options, you would take a massive pay cut from your $90,000 a year salary. Moreover, this would not be hiking with passion to the letter. These careers are related, but not exactly your passion. Even though it is a compromise, it is not nearly as much of a compromise as continuing your job as an accountant. Of course, all these jobs pay less than your controller job, but how much is your happiness worth? Would you rather spend the rest of your days crunching numbers for a company that you don't care about? Or would you rather be knee-deep in the sport that you love? Imagine those work hours that steal 45 to 80% of your life will no longer seem like thievery. You'll enjoy going to work and talking about work all day long. Will there be some tough moments? Yes. Demanding minor trails occur in any job. It will be especially tough getting used to the decreased income. But would you have been able to take that extra income with you to the grave? On your deathbed, looking back on your life, would you rather think of yourself as someone who spent the majority of his life doing an activity he didn't even enjoy? Or would you prefer thinking that you were someone who earned $45,000 instead of $90,000, but who loved every minute of his life and look forward to going to work almost as much as coming home?
Go West, young woman. Kathy Rogg, age 54, was a partner at an East Coast law firm. An 18-day rafting adventure in the Grand Canyon caused an inflection point in her life. She moved to the Southwest to practice law. Then one Colorado ski trip made the inflection point more dramatic. For over 10 years, Kathy has worked at the ski resort. She began at minimum wage as a snowmaking machine operator. Talk about a salary cut from being a partner at a law firm. Now she runs snowboarding events and rafting trips in Utah. When she started, she did some legal work to make ends meet, but now that she's returned to base camp, she doesn't need to do that anymore. She encourages everyone to create an inflection point in their lives.
The double bonus. First bonus, increased chance of success. You get two big bonuses when you hike with passion. The first is that you're more likely to hit the big time when you're doing what you love than when you are not. This is true regardless of your wealth. We should pity those who have high salaries. They have more to lose than those who have low salaries, so they frequently don't want to take big risks. They're less likely to pursue their passion than those who have more modest income because they're addicted to their income stream. Dave Thomas, founder of Wendy's Restaurants, didn't have a high school diploma, but was a millionaire by the age of 35 because he did what he loved and pursued it with all his passion. Wayne Huguenza sold trash hauling services door to door before he started Waste Management, Blockbuster, Auto Nation, Extended Stay America, and later bought three professional sports teams in Florida. And it's never too late to start. Look at Ray Kroc. At the age of 52, with diabetes, he started McDonald's. He pursued his vision with a passion and energy unlike most 20-year-olds could ever dream of doing. If you're relentlessly hiking with passion, you will succeed. For some extremely talented or lucky ones, it happens very quickly. For others, it takes years, but it will come. And of course, remind yourself what you already know. Money is not the best way to measure success. Catherine Dunham said, "I always believed
that if you set out to be successful, then you already are. Second bonus, health improvements. Think about how you feel when you're doing something you enjoy versus something that bores you or that you dislike. When you're doing what you love, your vitality soars. Compare that to the slouching, despondent, foot-dragging attitude you have when you must do something you don't truly care about. Hence, hiking with passion brings the bonus of improved health and a joie de vivre.
A Harvard MD pursues his passion. Imagine you have 2 degrees from Harvard, a BA, and an MD. Now imagine the guts it takes to decide that you will not be a doctor, but rather you're going to write fiction novels. To quit medicine to become a writer struck most people like quitting the Supreme Court to become a bail bondsman, said Michael Crichton. This was especially impressive considering Crichton's Harvard writing professors gave him C grades. The odds of making more money writing fiction than being a doctor were slim. Nonetheless, he knew that as long as he pursued his passion, money would eventually come. Ultimately, he wrote The Andromeda Strain, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, the screenplay for the movie Twister, and created the ER TV series.
What if you fail? In a sense, you can't fail when you hike with passion. The hike itself is the reward. How does one judge failure anyway? Just because you don't make a lot of money doesn't mean you're a failure. As long as you faithfully hike with passion, you will enjoy life more than if you didn't, and you will never be a failure. The only ones who fail are those who spend their lives coming up with excuses as to why they can't pursue their passion. One of my favorite sayings is, nobody ever lay on his deathbed thinking, I wish I had spent another day at the office. Although frequently quoted, those who are stuck in unfulfilling jobs don't repeat it enough. Write it down on your refrigerator. Make it your screensaver on your computer, or think about it when you're in the shower. On the other hand, if you're hiking with passion, you might smile when you see that phrase and think, well, I'm glad I spent all those days at the office because I was pursuing my passion and enjoying my life. Mark Twain quipped, work is a necessary evil to be avoided. Well, I say the best way to avoid work is to make work your passion. Dr. Thomas Fuller said, serving one's passions is the greatest slavery. Summary. At just under 3,500 feet, Mount Greylock is the tallest mountain in Massachusetts. The best part of the mountain isn't the pretty view or the imposing war memorial that soars 100 feet into the air. It's the Bascom Lodge at the summit that offers a lip-smacking all-you-can-eat breakfast. No famished pilgrim would ever turn down half a dozen maple syrup-drenched pancakes. It's rare to find such fine and abundant cuisine a few feet off the AT. Normally, to get such a scrumptious meal, you have to hitchhike into town with a meat cleaver collector. Let's review what we've proven in this chapter. We spend 45 to 80% of our conscious time working. Life is too short to be wasted on a job you're not passionate about, so make that 45 to 80% count. Do what you love. There is always a way to make money in any passion. There are always some individuals who make millions of dollars in every profession. There is always a progression of income as you climb up the ladder of excellence in any profession. It's not an all or nothing bet. There are always related career tracks in any profession that may be viable if you can't afford to pursue your passion in its purest form. And finally, hiking with passion gives you a higher chance of succeeding in a competitive industry and improves your health dramatically. Paralleling our AT Odyssey,
we are leaving the rigorous terrain of New England and entering the more mild lands of the eastern mid-Atlantic. Although some may instinctively agree with the first three principles, others may have difficulty accepting them. However, we can already see how the principles interconnect. To enjoy life, the first principle, you must hike with passion, the third principle. But to do that, you must beware of summit fever, the second principle. As I mentioned at the beginning of the book, you don't have to follow all the principles. However, the more you follow, the more you optimize your life. Hiking with passion can be risky, especially if you're passionate about a field that is littered with failures and broken dreams. How can you increase the odds of success? That's what the fourth principle and the next chapter is all about. So I'll leave you with a quote from Woody Allen in his movie called Side Effects. He said, "It seemed the world was divided into good people and bad people. The good ones slept better, while the bad ones seemed to enjoy the waking hours much more."